Let's continue with our deliberations. We are now going to discuss the interesting topic of goodwill and impairment. And I give the floor to De Haal. De Haal, I think you are on mute.
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes. That's better.
Okay. Thank you, Hans, and good afternoon, everyone. So next, we have Agenda Paper 5 on Goodwill and Impairment. For the purpose of the session today, we would like to first discuss the summary of the feedback that we have received for the discussion paper, as well as some of the things that the board might wish to take into account for its re-deliberations of the preliminary reviews included in the discussion paper, before moving on to discussing the second part on convergence with US GAAP. Slides 8 to 14 provide an overview of the feedback on the board's preliminary reviews. For each of the areas of the discussion paper, the slides include a high-level summary of the messages that we've heard, followed by some aspects that the staff think the board might need to consider when it is re-deliberating its views. Slide 15 lists some of the key decisions that the board will need to make. As an update, the board met on Wednesday last week and decided not to change the objective and scope of the project at this stage. The staff plan to ask the board the other questions as the discussion continues. With that, I would like to turn your attention to slide 16 of the paper and would like to know if ASAF members think that there are any other key pieces of feedback or considerations that are not listed on the slides, which you think the board should take into account in its re-deliberations. Thank you.
Well, that's a broad question. Let's see if people think we have overlooked issues that should be included in the re-deliberations. The floor is open. Pauline.
Yeah, thank you. I think this is a really thorough piece of work, and it looks to me as though you've considered everything relevant. The only thing I thought might be worth considering, and I'm sure you're already doing this, is looking at what's happening currently as a result of the economic condition situation that people are in post the pandemic. I know my colleagues in the FRC have carried out a very good piece of work looking at interim financial statements and looking at the extent, amongst other things, the extent to which impairment has been recognised in relation to goodwill. I think they've come up with looking at their limited survey, I think about over 50% have actually made some impairment provisions. I guess it's a good opportunity to test how effective those provisions are in the context of the current environment. And I don't think you'll get a better test of it than you're going to get at the moment. So I wondered if there was any merit in carrying out a wider survey internationally to see what's happening elsewhere in the world in this respect.
Okay. Thank you, Pauline. Chiara?
Yes, thank you, Chair. At this stage, we only had preliminary roundtable discussion with members of the CFSS, our consultative forum. They didn't find any additional point that was missing for the ISB to consider.
Okay, thank you, Chiara. Linda?
Thank you. No issues with the scope, but one of the things we've been discussing is whether or not there's an ability to execute, I'll use the word phases, but it could be in chunks, however you choose to do it, because you could do them very close together, and it might facilitate moving things forward. What we were discussing, for instance, is there's a few elements of the proposal that there seems to be very widespread agreement on, and that you'll probably get a very favorable reaction on because it will reduce some complexity. So things like business acquisition disclosures related to financing and pension liabilities acquired, the pro forma operating profit, allowing post tax cash flows and post-tax discount rates when estimating value in use, allow asset enhancement and restructuring cash flows to be included in value in use estimates, and potentially, although I'm not sure on this one, refining the level of which goodwill is tested for impairment. Generally speaking, in our jurisdiction, these are being well received, and a project to get those done and in place, I think, would be well received. As I see it, there's two other distinct phases. One has to do with the disclosures. And while we support the disclosure proposals, we understand that they are a significant change from current practice and may take more time to deliberate and develop. And so therefore, you could consider actually separating these out and do these in a separate proposal to allow some time for field work. Testing the proposals. We think that in this case, extensive field work may better inform you of the practicality of the disclosures. And also the disclosure objectives can be developed as part of the phase of this project to ensure consistency with the disclosure proposals themselves. So that's also a distinct phase. The last chunk are the areas that seem to be more contentious, at least from our discussions, and it doesn't seem to be a complete consensus that may require more time to redeliberate and address. And this it would include, in our opinion, the indicator-based impairment test to review whether it's possible to provide additional impairment indicator guidance to make the test as robust as it should be, and then the notion of the reintroduction of amortization. And we're going to discuss convergence with US GAAP next, but given there's merit to both approaches, whether it's impairment only or impairment with amortization, it may take more time to sort this out. So it's just something we would ask you to consider in the notion of moving the project forward on a timely basis.
Thank you, Linda. Jay Ho.
Thank you, Hans. We would like to suggest that the ISB separate the disclosures about acquisition and subsequent accounting for goodwill, and then sequence them with subsequent accounting for goodwill put first. As we understand, the disclosures about acquisitions were contemplated in order to make them serve as sort of deterrent against too little, too late recognition of goodwill impairment. However, we are not quite sure whether the disclosures about acquisition could effectively remedy the problem with the robustness of the goodwill impairment test. So we think the disclosures about acquisitions could be better explored only after the issue of subsequent accounting for goodwill is resolved. Thank you.
Patrick.
Thank you, Hans. just wanted to couple of remarks. The first one is on the circumstances we've been going through. I think it's, prior to that, I think there was little evidence that the model is broken. So I'd like to see, of course, if additional research is demonstrating that under pandemic conditions, the situation is different. Though I suspect that any model would be under stress under the current circumstances. But I think it would be good to have some sort of additional academic research or research to form a view. Because, again, I think that in order to move forward either on the improvement of the impairment testing or other models, we need to have a clear picture of is it broken or is it not. And would, by the way, any other model provide a solution to the issue? Second, I think that it's good to not to change the objective. I think we're still, the feedback is that, of course, it seems to be that people are cautious about too much. There is a big trend in favor of simplification. That's what I observe, and that's a good thing. And on additional disclosures, there is an element of prudence here. So I think that on the simplification side, this is one of the important elements of feedback that we get. And also, I would encourage to see, because information for me is key, in particular during the first period following an acquisition, where whatever the model, amortization or impairment would have to be considered if the acquisition is not evolving in the right direction. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. I have sympathy for both yours and also Pauline's comment that it will be interesting to look at what the stress of the pandemic, how it is affecting goodwill impairment. On the other hand, bankruptcies are at a low, and governments and central banks have stepped in to such an extent that the full stress is not being felt yet.
Today, yes.
Yeah,
today.
And also, that's why I also think it's too early to, if you look at the banking sector, has also been buttressed by all these measures. And it's probably also too early to say whether IFRS 9 has worked perfectly well. So I think it's worthwhile to take a look at what is happening right now with impairments, but I wonder if it truly reflects the economic situation.
Well, may I react to that?
Yes.
But by saying that anyway, you know, what central banks do or what governments do is an element of the picture.
Of course.
So you can't exclude that, because businesses operate in an environment which is determined by liquidity as offered by central banks, or by support that is given by governments in terms of tax or any other shape or form of support. And well, that's a fact of life.
Yeah. But you know, the reason for taking a particular look is that you expect a lot of economic stress to be in the system. And I think a lot of it has been taken out because of all these actions. Anyway,
are you suggesting an impairment of countries' goodwills?
that is going to be that question is going to be answered in the future.
Okay, thank you, Hans. Generally, we agree with the summary of the feedback received by the board and the considerations in the slides. We think this summary covers various issues for the goodwill and impairment project, which will be very helpful for the next step for the project. Just two suggestions. The first one, we suggest the board to take the impact on the practice of financial statement preparers into consideration based on the cost-benefit principle and that's the first suggestion. The second one is about the regulators, because the goodwill impairment is also a focus of the regulators, and sometimes it's more effective for some disclosure issues to be resolved by the regulators. In addition, and the goodwill impairment test is relatively difficult to supervise for the regulators. So we, based on these facts, that we suggest maybe the board could take the information needs of regulators into consideration as well. Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Yu. Jim.
Without taking a view on whether you should look at multiple projects or two projects, it does seem that the scope of what you're talking about, at least as it relates to disclosures, is much broader than goodwill and subsequent impairment. Talking about pro forma disclosures about performance tangentially might relate to goodwill, but really is not directly related to the accounting for goodwill or its subsequent impairment. And I think many of the disclosures are really more about business combination performance, irrespective of goodwill or impairment. And so I just wonder if there's a branding issue with respect to the project name. And the project we have, I think we call, you know, goodwill and impairment, but we're much more focused really on the goodwill and its subsequent impairment. So it just does seem broader than the title.
I think you're right, but it's just shorthand for the project as a whole. But clearly, subsequent performance as a whole is very important to the board. Okay, Dehao, can you introduce the second topic?
I forgot
Riego. Riego.
Thank you. I'm going to share some feedback from AOSSE members. Some members emphasize the importance of the issue on subsequent accounting for goodwill. They believe that issue should be prioritized because the decision on that issue would affect disclosures. In addition, one member suggested that improvements to the impairment test should also be prioritized, as an impairment test would be required under both the impairment only and amortization approaches. Regarding disclosures, some members expressed concerns on the subsequent performance of acquisitions and expected synergies. They questioned whether those disclosures would achieve the project objective and whether those disclosures should be provided in the financial statements. In addition, one member recommends in reviewing the balance of disclosures, the ISB consider setting up a working group comprising investors and preparers to enable direct communication between these two groups. That's a summary, and I'm going to send the details of the feedback after this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Rieko. Okay, Dehao, I think you can continue now.
Okay, thank you. So moving on to the next part of our discussion today, we would like to seek ASF members' advice on convergence with US GAAP. This is one area of the feedback that as staff, we felt needed more information about to support the board's decision making. Although many respondents did not comment on convergence, most respondents who said so said that they would like to see IFRS standards and US GAAP remain relatively converged on goodwill accounting. However, many of these respondents said that the issue of convergence should not be the key factor that should determine the course of action that the board takes, or that their view would not change to achieve convergence. Slide 18 summarizes the current position of IFRS standards and US GAAP in relation to business combinations. Broadly speaking, although both standards are currently relatively converged on the topic, there are differences both in terms of the detailed requirements and also the regulatory environments surrounding entities which apply IFRS standards and entities which apply US GAAP. Slide 19 summarizes the feedback that we have heard about convergence and some of the things that the staff think the board should consider when making its decisions. The board will also be discussing this topic with FASB in their joint meeting next month. Questions for ASF members are on slide 20. We would like to know, what do you understand by convergence given the existing differences in the standards? What would the cause of potential divergence be for both preparers and users? How important the topic should be when the board makes its decisions? And also whether there's any difference in the objective and scope of the FASB and IASB's projects that in your view would result in different outcomes for both projects. So with that, I would like to turn over the discussion to the staff members. Thank you.
Now, the floor is open. Jim?
Yeah, maybe just to comment on our project, and it's partly why I brought up the discussion about the even calling it goodwill and impairment. Our project is at this point focused on the accounting and not on goodwill or acquisition related disclosures, many of which occur in our MD&A or management commentary. But the project itself I think all of our board members believe that we will be much better off to benefit from discussions with the ISB and seeking convergence. One, I think we are substantively aligned today. There may be some minor differences in the details, but I would suggest that the outcomes are substantively aligned. Even in application of purchase accounting itself, there might be some minor detail or differences in the detail, but I think most would view the standard is about as converged as perhaps any standard. And so we think there's a significant benefit to that. A majority of our board at this point would prefer to amortize, but we've done those aren't even, obviously in the development of any ED, votes are tentative. We've taken those even as more tentative. Those are leanings of the board because we do want to learn from and benefit from the discussions team to team and that we'll have jointly with the IESB. We're also looking at application of the impairment test. Some things that I think maybe our board feels, again, they're all leanings, but maybe more strongly than others. For example, under US GAAP, the impairment test today, many people call it, instead of indicators, they call it triggers, which people then focus on a specific date. And if you just go to the pandemic, there was a suggestion on what date is my goodwill impairment triggered? Was it, you know, March 28th of last year? Or what was the specific date? And then believing that they have to test goodwill impairment on that individual date without consideration of facts and circumstances that may occur before quarter end. So we think, for example, it would be much more beneficial to indicate that, or to provide in GAAP, that the test could be done as of the end of the reporting period. One, most goodwill impairment indicators or developments aren't tied to an individual day. They're really a series of events. So things like that we're looking at. We are converged effectively on the unit of account. I think a cash generating unit is very similar to our reporting unit concept. Our board tentatively or preliminarily would like to move that up to align it with more closely with external reporting and segments. We've heard from users they don't understand the concept at a layer below. But those are the types of things we're thinking about in the project. And again, I think substantive opportunity to share and to try and keep converged standards aligned. I think on slide 18 about what we've heard on what the ISB's heard on convergence is very similar to our stakeholder feedback as well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. That's very helpful. Linda.
Thank you. We've had obviously lots of discussions about this given our marketplace. So I'm just going to go through each of the questions fairly briefly. So it says, what do stakeholders mean when they refer to convergence? We think that typically that the initial and subsequent accounting for goodwill and the recognition of acquired intangible assets separately from goodwill should be largely consistent between the two frameworks. We have had some discussions around the notion that the impairment testing model under both frameworks doesn't have to be identical, but they both need to be viewed as being robust, and general comparability between the outcomes would certainly be highly desirable. And in terms of disclosures, while we think that the disclosure requirements could be different, if there is a set of core disclosures that all users agree on are important, it would certainly be helpful and beneficial if those were included in both of the frameworks. And so I think you can chuck down that notion of comparability that way. In terms of our view of the cost of divergence for users and preparers, the cost of divergence in terms of what users tell us is that companies applying IFRS standards and trying to raise capital in the U.S. markets, which a number of our entities certainly do, may incur higher costs or may have a more complex process of dealing with potential investors because of the difference in accounting for goodwill. And one of the things that we're learning is that in some cases, the users are not as sophisticated about the differences between the two frameworks, and so that entities are having to spend a lot of time explaining any differences that are perceived. And as well, the cost to perform the impairment calculation, which would include involving valuation experts and auditors, may be more onerous under IFRS if you diverge in terms of the notion of amortization. So that's also something to consider as well. In terms of the differences in the existing models justifying different outcomes, we've not identified any reason to date to justify a different outcome. And so we can't really contribute to that discussion. I think that our view is generally speaking on this important matter, the outcomes should be relatively similar. And in terms of maintaining convergence and the accounting goodwill, is that an important factor? Arguably, in our jurisdiction, we're biased because of the number of operations that do business in both of the countries, in Canada and the U.S. Roughly speaking, about 15% of the companies domiciled in Canada also are dual-listed in the U.S. That's the number of companies and not the number of, actually, the market cap. The number of market cap would be significantly higher. So this is an important issue for our jurisdiction.
Okay, thank you, Linda. Pauline.
Thank you. I think this is a really difficult balancing act, and I'm not sure I envy you the task of trying to get this right. Clearly, from our perspective in the UK, convergence with US GAAP is very important for some of our major companies and is also a significant issue for users who have a global perspective. But it's not the only consideration that needs to be taken into account. And certainly our recommendation in our comment letter of a hybrid model was not driven by convergence. It was driven by considerations that are more relevant in the UK. And indeed, I don't think our proposals would actually have achieved convergence, didn't we, since we didn't advocate either a default or a cap for the amortization period. We haven't actually explored with stakeholders yet what the specific view of convergence is, although I'm very happy to pursue that as the ISB develops its considerations further. But I think it's important to stress that a desire for convergence doesn't mean necessarily that you end up with identical models and identical disclosure. There are different considerations that the ISB needs to take into account when it's looking at the more international perspective. And certainly the primary focus of all standard setters, I think, needs to be on the model that produces the most faithful representation of the issue. And that doesn't necessarily look the same in every part of the world. So I would urge you to balance the desire for convergence with the desire to reach the right accounting treatment. Thank you.
Thank you, Pauline. Alberto.
Yes, thank you. Well, I think that convergence was an utopistic idea many years ago, and which is now almost dead. But there is a need, in our view, to harmonize the two set of standards, Europeans, US, and three, European, international, and US. Harmonization means trying to reduce as much as possible the divergences, knowing that it will never be possible to have complete identity. But we would recommend the board, the National Accounting Standard Board, to try to reach this harmonization, smoothing the different angles, the small differences. And we have also sent the auspices to the FASB to do the same with the same spirit. On the subject of impairment only or amortization and impairment, this has been a long debate. I don't think that it is worthwhile seeking more evidence in favor of one or the others. I think that over past years, everything has been said. Now it's a matter to try to conclude what is the best or the least worst. But on this very, very important decision, I think that the two boards should arrive at the same conclusion. I'm not saying which one, although you know that we are in Italy, there is quite a pressure to come back to amortization, but I'm not saying which one at the moment, but hopefully we would very much welcome one decision for both the two set of standards. Thank you.
Thank you,
Jeho. Thank you, Hans. We think convergence with the US GAAP, especially on the front of subsequent accounting for goodwill, is very much important factor to consider. However, if the ISP decide to reintroduce amortization of goodwill in tandem with the FSB, we recommend recognizing amortization expense in OCI rather than in P&L. It is because recognizing amortization expense in P&L would utterly misrepresent the financial performance of a company. To be sure, we acknowledge that the current conceptual framework allows for including income or expenses in OCI only if, first, they arise from a change in the current value of an asset and liability, and second, doing so provide relevant information. So based on this, although the current conceptual framework would not allow the amortization expense to be recognized in OCI, we would like to suggest this alternative for the sake of faithful representation. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeho. Patrick?
Thank you, Hans. I would like to make a distinction, which is based upon, the different levels of decision-making. If the idea is to improve the current models, I think that there is a real rationale in favor of developing the dialogue that Jim was mentioning, because it certainly would be better if we were aligning, in more details, the way on how to measure, for instance, impairment or the level of information and the impairment testing processes. The other dimension is, of course, if, and that's probably the elephant in the room, it seems to be the case, the FASB is moving or leaning towards amortization, then it's a different decision making. In that case, I would recommend that the ISB be considering the facts and patterns that are, underlying. And in that case, I think that convergence becomes a little more difficult. The way forward would be, in my view, if there were two different decisions in that respect, that recognition be maintained, because in a world where, in fact, no solution is perfect, I hope that users would be in a position to understand two different answers to the same question. So two different levels of decision making, quite frankly. And I would encourage a dialogue on the first one and on the second one also, but I don't know if it is not already somehow, if the elephant of the road is in the room is not materializing already. And I'm asking Jim to a certain extent.
Well, I think Jim was pretty clear. Or he's not going to be clearer than he was in the beginning.
Hans, I could respond to that. I think in saying it's a leaning of the board, that is sincere. We really do want to work with the ISB, and we think we'll be much more successful on this topic in line with the comments that we've already heard, that users are better off globally with a converged solution. Frankly, we hope we're successful in persuading the IASB to our point of view. But if we're not, we will learn from where you're at, and so our conclusions are not in any way final.
Chiara?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Well, when we sent the letter to the discussion paper, we included also a comment on convergence, and I think it's still valid. We considered convergence as a high-level objective, recognizing that the FASB current work could influence the decision by the IASB. However, EFRAG responses to the detailed questions in the discussion paper did not depend on whether the outcome would be finally consistent with the US GAAP. And we also noted that the relevance of the convergence also on disclosure and not only on the subsequent measurement, also considering the commercial sensitivity of the proposed disclosures at the level playing field. We also had an initial discussion with the Consultative Forum of Standard Setters last week. The majority of the members that participated considered that convergence is desirable, but it's not the most important factor. And then as for which part of the standard ought to be converged, we had mixed messages. Some observed that a cherry-picking approach to convergence is not acceptable, and some observed that convergence was also important for disclosure and not only for the amortization.
Okay, thank you, Chiara. Yu Chen?
Okay, thank you, Hans. Generally, regarding the goodwill impairment project, we believe that it's better to give more considerations on how to provide high quality accounting information to meet the needs of users, while how to converge with the US GAAP is not the most important factors to consider. Regarding which aspects to be converged, we suggest to give priority to the subsequent accounting of goodwill. As for the other aspects, it can be achieved step by step to avoid the negative impact on the project process. Regarding the costs of divergence, for users and the preparers, we have no idea. We suggest the board to listen more to the investors and the preparers to seek views from them. Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, Rieko.
Thank you. From AOSSG, I'm going to share 2 points on convergence. One member believes that the key element in respect of converging with US GAAP is the overall regime of subsequent accounting of goodwill. That is, whether goodwill is subsequently amortized or subject to impairment only. That member believes if the FASB were to require goodwill to be amortized, and the IASB keeps the existing impairment-only model, the IASB should consider providing its constituents with reasons and an effect analysis of any potential gap differences. Another member believes that it is worthwhile to consider the application of impairment test under US GAAP and IFRS because there are divergences in that area. Thank you.
Thank you, Rieko. I believe that brings us to the end of this topic a little bit early. Shall we take a 15-minute break?
Hans, Nobu has a comment, and I actually had I would like to ask a follow-up question.
Yeah, I missed that. And you have a question? Okay. Well,
yes, please.
Nobu.
Okay, can I go? Yeah.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you.
would have been very disturbed to have a Japanese input here on this topic. Thank you, Nobu, for helping out.
First of all, if IFRS standards were to be truly global standards, we believe that the main requirements in IFRS should be comparable with the main requirements in US GAAP. And whether to amortize or not would be one of those main requirements. And if the two boards decide to diverge, it is easy to imagine that at some point in the future, people will come up and say, well, the two boards need to converge. So in our view, divergence is not a sustainable solution. Regarding the depth of convergence, we are of the view that the more comparable, the better. But as others have mentioned, we think it is difficult to have identical standards. But that does not mean that the two boards should strive to move into that direction. Regarding the benefits of convergence, users benefit from reduced costs from not being required to reconcile between the different accounting models, and preparers benefit from having a common measure to compare the performance of the entities within the consolidated group. Entities in our jurisdictions have operations in the U.S. as well as in Europe, with the former applying U.S. GAAP and the latter applying IFRS. And we have learned from those entities that it is extremely costly to reconcile the differences between the accounting standards to come up with a common measure. Therefore, we have significant doubts about the observation in the paper that says that it is relatively easy to adjust for the difference. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Nobu. Nelly?
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to make sure I understood a couple of the comments, and apologies if I'm asking for a repetition of your comments, but a few of you had mentioned that convergence maybe is a priority or maybe it's desirable, but not as much of a priority. And you referred to convergence of the subsequent accounting for goodwill. And I just wanted to make sure I understood exactly what you meant with subsequent accounting for goodwill. Are you just referring to the question of amortization or no? Or did you also mean to refer to the life of the useful life and the method of amortization? And I think Linda, Kiara, I think you were the two that I had jotted down as maybe not understanding myself. And then Yu Chen, you had mentioned a step-by-step process, and I just wanted to make sure I understood when you said step-by-step, were you also referring to useful life and amortization method or something else?
Okay, thank you, Nelly. In our view, we mean that the subsequent accounting of goodwill, that is amortized or not amortized, is the what we mean. When I were saying step by step, we refer to the other aspects of the goodwill. For example, the very detailed accounting treatment of the, for example, the impairment test or the disclosure and some other things. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. I understand that Catherine is already available to present her the final item on the substance agenda. Is it okay if we just continue? Yes, I think people are okay with that.